You will recall that we agreed that today we'll be deliberating on the code of conduct, the judge's code of conduct. And then I'm opening it up for discussion. Let's start. Anyone want intending to do some input? Honorable Korenov, Honorable Korenov.
The chairperson, just before we start with the code of conduct, yesterday we sort of ended with the regulations, and the Honorable John Jeffries is now not here. I just want to commend him.
Is he here?
I just want to commend him. I think we made lots of progress in the way he was interacting with the judges, and I think we're not far from a solution there. Maybe we can ask some of the officials to draft something around where we stopped yesterday so that we don't lose out. I was just thinking the 75 years becomes a marker, and then 2008 when the legislation becomes so if we can work around that, we might be very close to a solution with regard to the retired judges.
Yes, maybe it's correct. Let us reflect briefly about how the process of yesterday will be taken, but let us not spend much time on it because we need to deal on the code of conduct today. Honorable Schaeffer.
Chair, look, I must say that I think yesterday's interaction was useful, but I think it was quite disappointing. Basically, the retired judges were, I thought, only approaching things from a personal interest point of view. But it did raise useful points. But I think on the register, there are a number of fairly contentious issues that we need to look at. And those basically would be the issue of spousal or partners disclosures and the enforceability of that. The issue of disclosures for acting judges, the points that Judge Nwepe raised in the submission to the Joint Committee. And then I think from the retired judges, I must say that I can understand that they don't like it, but given that it was passed unanimously, I thought they could have done a plan B, which would have been to say, okay, we reserve our rights to oppose this even, we are, you know, but if you do go ahead with it, these are amendments we think you should make. And the one seems to be the issue of the distinction between the 75-year cutoff and those after who continue being available for service after 75 may need to continue to disclose, but those who aren't available, it stops at 75. I do think the point of whether the entire code can be enforceable for judges appointed before 2008 when the Act came into effect is something we'd need to get legal advice on. And there would be two categories of sitting judges and retired judges. I think those areas are the ones that need to be looked at. But I want to suggest that we separate out the code from the regulations. That with the code, there doesn't seem to be anything emotional. It's just really a wording issue. And my understanding is the code is what is urgently needed to deal with the judges' disciplinary matters. So we proceed as fast as we can to finalize the code, and then maybe come back to the regulations, which are more controversial, and we may need to be more creative, and we may need to consider things more.
Thank you, Honorable J. Honorable Schaeffer.
Thank you, Chair. I thought we had already decided we were going to split the code off from the registers, and I agree with that. I think we should get it split out and try and come to some solution on the registrable interest. I agree also that we need to clarify the issue of 2008. I think it's quite a valid point whether we can bind people who appointed before 2008 with legislation that was passed only then. And I do think we also need to look at the categories of over 75 or between 70 and 75 still able to be called up or whatever they call it. I think that we need to look at those different categories in terms of the independent, whatever, judges. What's it? Independent Remuneration Act, I think it is. Or the Judges' Remuneration, sorry. Judges' Remuneration Act. And then my question on the code, though, is as follows. I mean, we keep on being told that we can't conduct any disciplinaries and so on in the JSC without the code. Now, the code, as far as we can't make retrospective legislation either. So how is the code going to affect disciplinaries that have been pending for the last 2 or 3 years? Anyway. And why is it so necessary that we pass it? Because I'm worried that we do need to pass it, that I agree. But I'm concerned that what is the status of the investigations that have been started before this is going to be approved?
Okay, we'll deal with that. Honorable Landers.
Chair, thank you. Yes, I'm sorry for being late. I want to agree with Mr. Jeffrey's approach and say let's move on that basis. I think the point raised by Ms. Schaefer is one that needs consideration. I've also been wondering how that's going to work. But aside from that, I think getting to the question of the code itself, a judge, far more than a cabinet minister, could find herself or himself facing a very serious security threat, depending on the cases they hear. And for that reason, I want to strongly urge this committee to look at the judge's place or places of residence being placed in the confidential register, as opposed to the one that's available to the general public, with access to both registers only being granted, with access to the confidential register only being granted to the registrar and the Chief Justice. The reasons were adequately motivated by the group headed by Justice Mpati when they appeared before you, Jefferson. So it's not necessary for me to repeat the motivations that they made. So for now, that's my little input. I would have loved to have asked just Judge Friedman and his partners whether they agreed with the Bangalore principles of judicial conduct, which was agreed to in 2002 and are still relevant now in relation to their position on retired judges having to declare their financial interests. Mr. Jeffrey, I'm also extremely disappointed.
Yeah, let's just say now we are done with what happened yesterday, and the discussions now we're going to focus on the code, on the Judges Code of Conduct. But
yes,
I also want to reiterate what I said yesterday. I was also having that impression at the end of the meeting. I had felt that the meeting of yesterday was well. We discussed various issues and we delved in it, we engaged thoroughly and in detail. Yes.
Chairperson, can I just support you in that? I think it was a very valuable afternoon. Time well spent in terms of a committee.
Good job.
Okay. Siabong. Right, let us talk about, before I go to that, Department of Justice, you have captured what is being suggested insofar as the process should be taken forward relating to the rules. Yes. So that when we come back and deliberate with the rules. At least we should not start from the beginning. We want to find out what is the department proposing and the like, and then we'll move forward from there. Right. The code, throughout, there was a feeling that there's sort of some consensus, some meeting of minds insofar as the code is concerned. What are the areas that you people think we have to deliberate strongly about for this afternoon?
Right. Chair, the first issue is the one that I've raised. Can we have some input from the department as to what the status is of investigations up to now? I mean,
Section 14.4A of the Judicial Service Commissions Act provides the grounds upon which a complaint, the grounds 14.4A, grounds upon which any complaint against a judge may be lodged are any one or more of the following. Then it states, incapacity giving rise to a judge's inability to perform the functions of the judicial office in accordance with prevailing standards, a very wide concept, or gross incompetence, again, wide concept, or gross misconduct, as envisaged in section 177(1)(a) of the Constitution. So that, I think that is an acting provision that can actually authorize investigation of a judge, although there is no code. Then section 1771 of the Constitution states, it deals with the removal of a judge. A judge may be removed from office only if the Judicial Service Commission find that a judge suffers from incapacity, gross incompetence, or guilty of most gross misconduct. I believe section 14.4A is the provision that will authorize the
So then I need to ask the question, so the fact that the JSC has been holding these proceedings in abeyance is completely unnecessary?
I can maybe answer that. I believe currently there's no judicial conduct tribunal rules that is necessary to conduct misconduct proceedings, as only recently they have been given to the minister, and it's probably going to be tabled. But if that's a prerequisite for the rules, it must be tabled in Parliament in terms of section 25 before it can be published. So I believe that is probably the whole process.
That's not okay. That's the point.
Yes, as my colleague has said, the JSC is currently and has been able to deal with about 4 matters of complaints. But you extend that those complaints can end at the conduct committee. There's no request for a tribunal. How the process is that you can lay a complaint, the conduct committee can do an investigation, and they can recommend a sanction. Or the conduct committee can recommend that a tribunal be held to take it forward. So in the case of Justice Mutata, that's where the recommendation has gone to. The conduct committee did not finalize it, but recommended that a tribunal with a formalistic conduct committee inquiry that must take place is set. Now, in terms of the conduct, in terms of the tribunal, there are 2 requirements. One is that there are rules, not regulations, rules by the Chief Justice which regulate the proceedings before a tribunal. Those rules have been drafted, they've been introduced as yet. They have been tabled. 2, in terms of regulations, the regulations provide that the tribunal shall comprise of 2 judges and 1 member who is not a judge, who shall be appointed in terms of a procedure tabled in the regulation. So we are not able, the tribunal cannot sit, because regulations provide for that upon a catalogue, a panel of persons from which a member can then be designated to join this to constitute a tribunal. That's why the matters are held in abeyance, because we cannot constitute a tribunal until the regulations that provide the mechanism
for the third member of the tribunal are finalized by this committee.
Yeah, therefore, it calls for this ad hoc committee to expedite the finalization of the regulations as well.
Yes.
Any further input? Honorable Smith?
Mr. Chair, I see the code of conduct as defining that broad guidelines in the Constitution, and that any complaints being made at the moment or to be brought in future will be dealt with in terms of the empowering provision the Constitution has amplified by the Code of Conduct. So it is nothing more than amplification of that what's in the Constitution, but it needs to be, I think it needs to be spelt out, and I think that's the purpose of the Code of Conduct.
I was only half listening, but then seems the original proposal of delaying the registrar that the regulations won't work. Although what I'm not clear is that where I got this from was the presentation from the judges, and it was Judge Mpati who was saying do the code urgently, and you can take longer on the regulations. But be that as it may, I think we've raised on the regulations issues that we need a response from the department on. As far as the code, I think we need to go through it section by section. And if that's the case, I'm a little bit lost as to which draft we've got. I think it may be draft 2. Is that the correct one?
We got it yesterday.
But you know, the problem is that they're not dated or anything. Yes, but three of them I've got one which is, you know, I've got one which is two which are, one which is 10th of May, and then I've got a draft 2 10th of May. So both of these 10th of May. I presume draft 2 is the later one because it presumably comes after draft 1. But then why does it say draft 2?
If I only forwarded one document to the committee.
But Chair, can we, presumably there will be further amendments, can the officials, they're usually good, but not in this case, come with proper numbering and dates? Because we have two, yesterday, 15th of May, we were given a document which was dated 10th of May, and I've got, as I said, two versions. One which is, they both look the same, but one has got draft 2 on the top. So somebody stuck that on the program.
Maybe if I can just, you know, explain that. Last time when we had a meeting, there was an issue raised about the fact that documents are not numbered. We agreed that the one that we're working on was going to be draft 1. But the document that I received from the department didn't say draft 2, so I thought I should add draft 2 on top of the place so that members can see that this is a second draft 2.
That's the same document.
Exactly. Yeah, we have draft 1 from last week. So the one that they sent after our meeting, I decided to call the draft 2.
Okay.
No comment. Okay. The draft one, isn't it, is the one which we're dealing with.
Okay.
Yes, which has also some highlighted version. I remember I even made a note here. I said draft one. So the question is, this with the noting of draft two is the latest document than the one we're dealing with. This is the one that you received from the department. Mr. Robert, is that so? Okay. Mr. Honorable Oren Wolf, and then the after. Say what?
No,
I'm
done. It's me. Father Merva. I wanted to say Father
Merva. Yes. Chairperson, I thought we agreed that the notes will be under the line.
We did.
And these notes are not under the line.
Just drop. Put in a line.
Chairperson, I think it relates to the clause that deals with the objects and interpretation of the code. If one looks at Article 3, 4, at least we did assign a status to the note that it is merely there to elucidate and provide an explanation. So for all practical purposes, it is not binding as subordinate legislation, but it's merely to elucidate and to provide explanation as to what is contained in the substantive clauses of the code. Chairperson, but we agreed
to page number 5.
We agreed that it will be under the line.
When you go to page number 5, what will be the explanation, man? This document. It says notes, but there is no line.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can help. Yeah, I also had a hand in this, and I must confess I didn't quite follow what you meant by under the line. I thought that this is more or less the thing. You've got a main body, and then an extraction. But your problem is, if you refer to underline as in, for example, footnotes, then you'll have a situation where you deal with one or two main articles, and then a whole lot of things here that you'll have to read back up all the time, and it becomes quite complicated. I personally would have thought this is much easier, because you've got your main body, and what explanation refers or relates to that main body is right under the main body. But it's really a matter of preference, Chair. This is really the format that was used by the judges as well. And I thought we're not going to deviate too much from what they've done anyway.
Yes, we spoke at length about where we should not deviate much from what the judges have agreed upon. Yes. Honorable Safer, then Honorable Smith, thereafter.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make another suggestion and for people to think about is to whether we could possibly pass the regulation regarding the tribunal alone and hold over the registrable interests or not.
Advocate Kosana, help us on that one.
That's 25 of the Judicial Matters Amendment Act. The Chief Justice must make rules regulating procedures before a tribunal. Okay, and then it goes on to say it must be made within 6 months of commencement of this act. I'll come back to that. And there's no actual parliament. It must just be tabled.
The answer is yes.
What?
The question was
yes, no.
No.
Okay, thanks.
There are rules.
Yes.
The rules regulate the conduct.
Yeah.
Chief Justice, that you may call witness must come on date X or M. There are regulations which were tabled with the judges we talk about, but those regulations include a number of aspects. They include the declaration of final interest. They include the mechanism
to appoint the third person to be a member of the tribunal. It says, section to the composition of the tribunal. The tribunal comprised of two judges, one of whom must be designated by the Chief Justice, one person whose name appears on the list maintained in terms of Section 23.1. Section 23.1 creates a mechanism that in regulation, the Secretary in the Office of the Chief Justice must publish a list from time to time of members who may be drawn to be actual members of the tribunal. Now I'm saying there's no contention around that aspect.
Yeah.
If this House wants to pass only one rule, regulation that deals with that, because it's part of the package that deals with disclosure, that may be possible but may not be ideal. But all I'm trying to say, that's why I'm saying yes, may be possible, so that the tribunal can sit, then we can go and advertise and get the people put in the government council for those who want to constitute the tribunal. But all I'm saying is that that's why I was saying it's possible if they want to do them piecemeal, whatever.
Then you can sort out the register of interest.
Yes, that is the regulations relating to the appointment of certain persons. The rules and procedures of the tribunal is regulated by Section 25, and it states
that
it
requires tabling
before.
Yes, the Chief Justice one, but not this one. Clause 6 of the regulations about the tribunal, the appointment of the third person.
Yeah. Clause 6 of the regulations provides for a list of persons suitable to serve on the tribunal, and that's what Mr. Skosson is saying. They need a third person, a mechanism for appointing that third person. So he's saying that's what we need to pass. So if we can just pass that section of the regulations, excise it from the regulations as they are at the moment, and hold over the stuff about the registrable interest until we can come to a better formulation of that, we can at least get that through. Yeah, number 6. That's what he just said.
The Chief Justice invites the organized legal profession to redeem the law faculties of Philadelphia University to nominate persons who are not judicial to be entered on the list referred to in Section 23. Nomination of persons in writing, which corresponds substantially to Form 4, and be accompanied by a curriculum detail of the person nominated. Such persons of autonomy as may be directed. Nothing here that requires Parliament to do.
It's in Section 22B of the Act, and it's further regulated by Section 23 of the Act.
Manner, I think so. Section 22.1 of the Act says the Executive Secretary must, in the prescribed manner. Is that not what this regulation is about? I think it is.
But we're looking for where it says Parliament must approve of these regulations.
Oh, I see.
That's
so you're
saying, No, that's what I was trying to explain. That it may be excised. This part may be excised from the regulation which are for Parliament and be dealt with a separate regulation that is outside those parts of the regulation by the minister, so that the Parliament can only deal with those ones it must approve.
That's
my best,
sir.
Section 35.2 of the Act says that any regulation made under this section must be tabled in Parliament before publication in the Gazette. So tabled is the only requirement.
No,
so
tabled. So
let us not burden ourselves with what we are not required to do.
Mr. Chair, you will recall that there was another problem with that regulation concerning the rules.
Yeah.
And the problem was, if I understand it correctly, if you'll take your mind back to your meeting, was that it had to do with the chairperson of that particular tribunal, which was the Chief Justice. It was a referring mechanism and the investigation mechanism and what else. And I think it had to do with the amendments to the Act requiring the Chief Justice to sit as chairperson of most of those committees. And that's where the hiccup was in terms of those rules. So we got feedback at that particular meeting I'm referring to, saying that there needs to be amendment to the JAC Act requiring the Chief Justice to the chairperson of all these different committees. That is my understanding, if I follow correctly.
Honourable Landers.
Chairperson, in a situation such as that, where the JSC reaches these decisions, it would assist us if such decisions are referred to us formally. I accept that Mr. Schmidt, you, Chairperson, and others, Mr. Tanamerva, are members of the JSC, but we can't expect you to come. Next thing we'll have Mr. Kornoff differing with you and saying, no, Hendrik, you're wrong, and so on. A formal letter written by somebody that serves before a committee will assist.
You're quite right. The only problem is that referring mechanism is not any of us. That referring mechanism can only be the JSC or the Chief Justice himself. So if anything, maybe, Mr. Chair, could I then ask you to look at the minutes of that particular JSC meeting and see whether what I said has been conveyed correctly. Secondly, if that is so, maybe get a letter from the Chief Justice or someone saying, we need, in respect of the rules, these are the issues concerning the amendment of the Act as to the Chief Justice's position on some of these committees. Secondly, whatever the fact may be.
Chairperson, I think we may have found where we need Parliament's approval. Can I refer you and honourable members to Clause 13 of the Judicial Services Commission Act? Section 13, I beg your pardon. Subsection 7.
13.
Mm-hmm. Subsection.
For approval, okay, there
we go. Yeah, 7. The Minister, I'm not sure if this is it. I'm asking other honourable members to confirm this, because it refers to the first regulations under this section in Parliament for approval.
Register. Just the rest of it.
Okay, so we still don't need to approve these regulations.
Yes.
What?
Yes, Chair, that's what I was explaining, that from our department side, we need to exercise other regulations, because I think we've developed one set of regulations that include both.
Mm.
And table the same. I think in terms of the Act, it's only to exercise other regulations that require tabling, and table them separately, and leave only regulation under 13.7 that require approval.
Yeah.
Well, I believe the, something to reflect, if we take it out and table it separately, it just needs to be tabled in Parliament, and that specific section can be dealt with and can be published in the Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And no approval is necessary then.
Yeah.
Chairperson, can I ask a question to the learned colleagues on the other side there? Yesterday, was that then a completely waste of time?
No.
Mr. Kuroff, I believe that dealt with registerable interest. And this is a separate issue. This deals with the functioning of the tribunal. So if we take it out, everything that was done yesterday still relates to the regulations regulating registrable interests. So that's still fine. This actually doesn't belong in terms of that regulations and need to be promulgated separately.
Right, I think we've got a clue as to what it is expected from this ad hoc committee to do. Yes. Let us focus only on what we are expected to do and proceed along those ways. Along that way. Yes. And then it is the code
let us go page by page on the court and finalize and finalize this. Mr. Roberts.
What about the
thanks, Mr. Chairperson. Do you want me to read out the code? Per se, I'll just give a short, brief explanation.
If you want to highlight any aspect of it.
The preamble, there is certain amendments that can be suggested. In the fifth bullet, section 180B, must be in italics. And sorry, apparently not. Okay, on the second page at the bottom, the wording including such principles as set out in the Bangalore principles, I wonder if that should be inserted.
Yeah. No.
Two, no, top. It's a suggestion. It's
page two, the top.
Including such principles as set out in the Bangalore Principles of Judicial Conduct. In the following bullet, at the last sentence of the bullet, 14.4a, the paragraph A should be deleted. No, the A. On page two, the last bullet, after it starts with section 15.5, read with section 15.4. I believe it should be section 15.4b of the 14.4b. Sorry, excuse me.
B.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the preamble is mainly
Mr. Robertson referred to section 15.5, but I've got 12.5.
Section 12.5, read with section 14.4, and then insert B after the form, Mr. Jeffrey.
Can Mr. Robertson go a little bit slower and a little bit more precisely? So it wasn't helped by the fact that you said the Bangalore principles was at the bottom of page 2. I mean, that's what I heard, and it's in fact at the top. It hasn't been helped that you've been referring to section 15. When you're referring to section 14. So please be a little bit more precise so we can follow.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. I don't know, the draft to document might differ to an extent of the one I have got in front of me. I don't know, it probably moved down, but okay, I'll do
no, Chair, I thought we had understood we were working on the document which did not have draft 2 on the top. Or which one are we, I mean, I thought that was the same as this.
Which one are you using, Mr. Jeffrey?
Yes, it's the same document, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay, Mr. Jeffrey, I'll go slower.
No, more precise,
please. I'll do that. Okay, the preamble is mainly a paragraph that gives a short introduction to the Code of Judicial Conduct. I think that's its purpose. Then acting provision, that is, starts with, in the center of the page, Parliament of the Republic of South Africa approves the Code of Judicial Conduct for judges. That was changed. I believe the committee didn't like the previous enacting provision that was proposed by the Parliament, by the department. So we changed it now to read as such. The definition clause, it's on page 2, starts Article 1 definitions. That was also amended. I believe the previous version that was in this committee merely defined the code. We amended it to read there's a definition of the Act, and then the next provision we inserted that any word or expression to which a meaning has been assigned in this Act shall bear that meaning so assigned to it.
I must say, I think the level of precision on the part of the officials is leaves a lot to be desired. I'm looking at the document we were given in the last meeting. And Mr. Roberts made some changes, one of which was that Section 12.5 read with Section 14.3A must be changed to 14.4B. That's my note. Now, in the document that we've been given that is meant to have that change affected, he left out B. Now he's putting it in. So I'm just saying, I think, Mr. Roberts, you're not particularly thorough, and that doesn't help us. But now, be that as it may, under definitions, the document we had one definition, which was this code. This code means the code of judicial conduct contemplated in Section 12 of the Act. Now, that's gone. And instead, we have two new definitions, the Act and any word associated. And the original one that the department put in, they've taken out. So, Chair, and he doesn't mention it.
Chair, maybe I can help assist here,
yes.
Just explain a little bit. What Mr. Roberts did is he did what he thought was what was more or less agreed at the last meeting.
So did we agree that
yes.
this code must come out?
No, I'll get to that.
Okay.
But I asked him to send me a copy or a draft before it for distribution so that I can have also a look into it. And some of these changes, in fact, were affected by me. I didn't think that it's worth really, because there's nothing turning on the definitions, for example, but that the issue of, I could never understand why you define a code in a code. I mean, we're dealing with a code. Why define the code? We don't put a definition of an act or in a bill. We say that it simply didn't take the matter further. But I really didn't thought it was at all important. I just said, no, it's not necessary.
Can I just raise that point, Chair? I mean, procedurally, and the longer you know it, you've worked with us long enough, you can't just unilaterally, you may be correct, it may be that we don't need a definition of this code, but you cannot, when you've tabled a document in front of us, a document which is actually one which my reading of the Act is we've got to be relatively careful about how we amend. We can amend it. But it is the judge's, the Chief Justice's document and the minister's the Chief Justice's document. You can't, therefore, just summa delete a definition that you don't think is useful and not even tell us that's what you've done.
Yes, but we must remember that we looked at the drafted or the draft stapled by the judiciary. And at the last meeting, the decision was made, let's stick as close as possible to that draft and not like to change. Now, that definition that you referred to didn't appear in that draft. It was added, so...
Yes, but Chair, the draft that we got in the last meeting has a definition of this code. It is underlined, so it is a definition that you have put in. If you are going to remove that or propose that you remove it, you should tell us, instead of just, in your wisdom, infinite, not just, it's gone.
No, Chair, I accept that. And I also accept that once the committee goes through it, we will, these things won't slip through in any event. We will make sure that it comes through.
Okay. Just 1 second.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Can I just, for purpose of understanding where I am, I'm not lying somewhere, can't we have the advisor just indicate us the original document tabled by the judges versus the one we have, the later document we're supposed to be working on, because that will juxtapose the two and will cut out many of these problems. So we can see what is the proposed document by the judges and what's proposed amendment, and we can see which of the two we like. Because I honestly don't know where the original document tabled by the judges are. I can't relate it to anything. That's my problem.
Yes, that can be done, Chair. I think, and if we prepare an electronic document, it might be very helpful, and we will be able to do a very, very clear indication then by just omitting what they've got in their version. It's a bit technical, but we will do that.
Yes, I believe so. A document has been prepared. This code, or this document that was tabled, as merely a cleanup of the document. There is certain amendments that the department affected to that. We'll go through it slowly, and I'll explain each and every amendment affected by the department.
Chair, just for clarity's sake, the department is not affecting any amendment. Okay? You are proposing amendments, and it might be a small technical point that you're aware of, but it does also inform attitude.
That's correct, Mr. Jeffrey. I rephrase then. Any amendments proposed by the department. Let's go again to the definition clause. I was about to explain that we proposed that the definition of this code be omitted from the definition. And the B paragraph of Article 1, which says, any word or expression to which a meaning has been assigned in the Act shall bear that meaning so assigned to it, will catch the reference to code. The code is, to an extent, explained in Section 12 of the Act.
And see, may I just add that that's a feature of most regulations, that you just have a link to the principal Act and the regulations, so that whenever you read anything in the regulations that's defined in the Act, it will have the same meaning.
Article 2, application of the code. The department did not change it, it cleared it up. Got rid of all the strike through that was in the previous document, except the fifth paragraph of the document that was before the committee, which read, any willful or graceful negligent breach of this code amounts to misconduct by a judge. It is the department proposed that this be deleted, since it is unnecessary in light of the provisions of Section 14.4b of the Act, which provides that any willful or grossly negligent breach of the code is a ground on which a complaint against a judge may be lodged, as well as paragraph B above in the draft code 1b. It's in light of the provisions of the Act, we just propose that be deleted. It's already an Act, why must it be in the code?
It's more useful if we take the document they gave us last time. And there they went and stuck in a 5, which is any willful or grossful negligent breach of this code amounts to misconduct by that judge. Now that, they've removed. They put it in, proposed, and they've now removed it. And that's what he's talking about, as far as I understand. But it doesn't, I really would urge members to look at the document that we, the draft one that we got last time, because that has got the sections that they added. There's also, Chair, a footnote. I presume it's on all these documents.
Yep.
The footnote 71G. Is this a question to us? Consider purpose of this provision when compared to section 71G.
See, the footnotes I've just added because there were three issues that I was not too happy about, and I thought maybe it does merit further discussion. It's just not leave it that easy.
We're on page 3 now, aren't we? And we have had some discussions about judges no longer in active service. If we can just bear in mind that our discussions and ultimate decisions in that regard may affect what is actually provided for you. So in other words, I'm saying that let's flag this with that in mind. Because the Act includes judges who have been discharged from active service and also refers to,
And to further explain why the department omitted sub-article 5, must refer the committee to sub-article 3 of the previous code then, which says that any willful or grossly negligent breach of this code is the ground upon which a complaint against a judge may be lodged. In terms of section 14.4b of the Act. That is sub-article 2.3. That is why we don't feel that it's not necessary to still have subsection 5. The next clause deals with objects and interpretation.
Okay, sorry, may I just very briefly interrupt the chair? I do not know if you require me to look at the footnote. I think Mr. Landers really captured why I put a footnote in there. I was worried about the fact that we've got a section in the Act that says this is the definition of judge. I do not think, strictly speaking, you can now come in the code and make any kind of different dispensation. Not that it necessarily does so, but if it doesn't, then the question arises, but why put it in here in the first place? But it's not a big deal. I don't think a lot turns on it. In the end, as I put in the footnote, that will trump the code in any event. That is the parliamentary legislation. The code will never trump the Act. That's the first thing, Chen. Then secondly, maybe we should have raised this earlier. Neither of the previous versions, the one submitted by the judges and the previous one that we worked on, members may recall there was a discussion of it, speaking of rules, clauses, sections, whatever. So I thought it best, the Beijing, the Bangalore principles, they use principles. This thing is more or less in the format of the Bangalore principles now. That's why we've got, you can really call it anything. The judges called them rules. They didn't call them rules, but they referred to rules in their document. I always thought that's a bit confusing because we're dealing within the court milieu, and rules have a specific meaning context in the context of court. So I thought, let's use article, but it's again in the hand of the committee. You can either use nothing at all, but then always the question arises, what do you keep referring to? How do you make cross-references? And then you can call it either principles or rules or articles, sections, clauses, whatever. I stuck to articles. We find articles in things like international conventions, treaties, agreements, etc. It is not unheard of, so I thought, just for argument's sake, put article in the meanwhile, but obviously nobody is committed to it. That's the one change that I thought, just to very briefly draw to your attention, Chief. Then you can continue.
Sorry, I want to encourage Mr. Roberts to make it easier on him, because some of these things, he shouldn't hesitate to say that I did it.
Okay, Article 3 from page 3 deals with the objects and interpretation of the code. That's mainly the purpose of the code. The first sub-article, it describes the objects of the code. It's in C1. And then it further, in sub-article 2, and further on, describes the interpretation. In the previous document that was submitted to the committee, the department has explained a deletion of a large part of the then proposed Article 3.1. Of importance here is the reinsertion of the paragraph that deals with the notes, and we make provision therefore that notes appearing to this article of this code are in elucidation and provide explanation and guidance with respect to the purpose and meaning of the articles. I believe that was requested by the committee. Yes, and it's also in accordance with the original code, I believe, that was submitted by the judges.
Maybe can I just say there is an urgent matter that Advocate Kosana needs to go and attend presently. He has requested to take two. Now we are... I think we with your consent, just excuse him because there is an urgent matter he's going to attend.
Not urgent.
It's urgent. It's urgent. Yes. Yeah. Excuse me.
I need to take sexual offences.
I'll come back if I finish it.
Yes.
I need to take sexual offences act of legal opinion.
Robert Fayette, please proceed. Or Justice White, Honorable Jeffrey.
Chair, it is, I don't think notes appearing to articles of this code. Is that good English?
Notes appearing.
No.
In
article. After the purposes of an invitation.
It's the new form, Article 3, sub 4.
Use the old wording.
Well, the problem with the previous one is it just read these notes are in elucidation, so it doesn't say what these notes are.
Notes to articles in this code are for the purpose of elucidation.
So we delete the word appearing.
I think so. Notes to articles.
Notes to articles in this code.
Chair, just on the issue of quality, Mr. Lange, I presume your computers have a spell check. So if you look at footnote 2, the prevision, provision. But if you're taking this seriously, then you'd give us good quality.
Mr. Jeffrey, I believe I had something like a day to do this. I promised the committee to submit a document at a specific time to them, and it was done in urgency.
Right, understood.
Yeah.
Number 4, did you... I think we're done with number 4 to say it's going to read as notes to articles of this code. We delete the word appearing.
If you talk about sections of a bill, say sections in a bill.
Yeah.
So surely it would be articles of a code, not in a code.
Yeah, but it's note to articles. You're speaking of sections of a bill. So I'm saying note to
articles
in this code.
Sections of this bill,
yes. But it says section, note to articles
of this code.
It's all right. It doesn't really take it anywhere near
sorry, with your lead chairs, should it be required now that Mr. Jeffrey has drawn my attention to footnote 2 again? Does it merit any discussion? The issue there is simply, my footnote is in 2B, not being interpreted as impinging on the constitutionally guaranteed independence of the judiciary or any judge on the or on the separation of powers. And that what bothered me here is really, what does it mean? If it impinges, and if it's unconstitutional, then it is so. This will never save it. So I just thought, flag it.
Well, probably not, but if you take it out, then there are going to be all kinds of questions asked as to why and what the intention is, probably. So surely maybe it's easier just to leave it. As you said, it's not going to save it if it is unconstitutional, so why don't you just leave it in? Otherwise, there might be more questions asked about why it's been taken out.
Does it do any wrong
to
you?
I don't.
No.
I've got a more, bigger problem with the note than the...
That's not a note. Article 4, page 3 at the bottom. Article 4 deals with judicial independence. Well, we didn't affect the amendment to this article. We also undeleted note 3B.
Well, Ted, you know, please, you know, you've produced a document which said, I mean, the original draft was a judge upholds. There was no must. Okay? The version you gave us last time had shall. You've now changed it to must. Should you not be explaining why you've done that?
I'll have to come to that. In the document, reference in my previous document, I said in the document I substituted reference to must with shall. I did talk to state law advisors in the interim, and they are of the opinion that we must resort to drafting principles, and that the current drafting principle is to the effect that certain words in the ADR shall. You must use the word must, and that is what I did here. It's merely a substitution of a word to ensure that it's obedient.
But I may add, once again, it's a matter of your own personal preferences or of the committee's preferences. Nothing really turns on it. Personally, I prefer shall in many of the contexts. It just reads better and sounds better. Sometimes it sounds downright awkward to read. You must do this or must do that, but there's really preferences and you must decide on that.
So that is the main amendments that was affected to of this article.
Yeah, I think I prefer shall. And I support Mr. De Lange. Must seems like overtly prescriptive. You must do this. Whereas shall is more broader, more lofty.
Exactly.
Same meaning, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's something to get like have a huge row over, but I would agree, I think, with Mr. De Lange.
For an example,
if you look at note 4C, a judge must not appear at public hearings or otherwise. Ordinarily, you would say a judge does not. So that's one of the examples. It's like I said, you cannot simply replace everything with must, really.
Okay.
But we would require a license from the committee to go through with a fine-tooth comb and change it as we think whether it should be shall or must.
There's something else. The reference to the paragraph. Paragraph start at 4. So the first paragraph is actually numbered 4A, 4B, 4C, 4D, 4E. The notes, sorry, the notes to the paragraphs. Well, I will propose that we actually just use alphabetic numbering of the notes, just to refer to notes inter alia A, B, C, D, E. Reference will still be easy. In fact, it's note B under Article 4, but that's in the discretion of the committee. It seems odd. I don't know. A person reading the code will always wonder where note 1, 2, 3 is if you start with something like a 4A to refer to notes. Note. You know, except that you already have A, B, and C, and D.
Yeah.
Yes. So you may need to actually use Roman numerals for the notes to draw a distinction. That would make it a lot clearer. Otherwise, this way it's going to be a hell of a confusing. I would propose that to you, person.
Yeah.
And Chair, the judges used this. They only numbered their notes 1A, 3B, blah, blah, blah. The advantage thereof is cross reference. For example, I can now refer it straight to 4E. I don't have to say read note 4 under Article 4.
The judges didn't have shells or masks. They had under the notes, for example, and I actually think it reads better. A judge acts fearlessly, and it's because it's broader principles rather than a judge must act fearlessly. And you know, if you look at the one about public hearings, the judge must not appear at public hearings or otherwise consult with the executive. And I mean, that was you deleted before, now you've put it back. You did read judges do not appear at public hearings. Now, the difficulty I've got with that one, I'm not sure why you took it out. The difficult, judges wanted it in. But the difficulty I've got with it is that we had a... it's public hearings or consult with an executive or legislative body or official, except on matters concerning the law, the legal system, and the administration of justice. I suppose the hearings on the regulations were... what was the consultation? You know, it was a hearing. We were hearing them. The Superior Court's bill. We're not consulting. We've got the power, but we want to hear them. So maybe the department can say, why did you take it out? Maybe there were good reasons.
I was
raising two issues. The one was that the department, in its wisdom, put in musts and shalls, whereas the original code did not have that. It didn't have that. It just had a judge act. Judges do not say lead. So you've changed the whole style. effectively. So that was question one. Question two was your 4C, which was the third bullet, which is entitled a note to 3B. In the document you gave us last week, you removed that. You deleted it. You've now stuck it back. I was interested to know why you deleted it and decided to stick it back.
Chairperson, can I ask something, please? You know, can't we just not have a general approval of the code and then really get two or three people to go into the semantics and then come back to us with a final draft? But, you know, I don't think we can go into a debate. I think we're busy now 20 minutes on shall, must, or whatever. It should not be there, as in the original. And we on paragraph 3, you know, basically the code of conduct is no problem. I've got no problem with it. But there are here and there semantics. And is it really the duty of this committee to spend another 2 hours and then we won't be half through this today? I can't see that. We don't do it in finance or any other committee like that. Otherwise, we will never finish our work.
Luckily, I'm not in charge.
Luckily for you.
Yeah, me, there is this proposal. That's what we are doing here. Maybe let us devote it to a few number of people to go and go through this process that we are going through and come up with a different document which will flow easily when we deal with it. And then I've noted the Honourable Chair Jeffrey first and then the after Schaefer.
Okay, I've got a huge problem with Mr. Quinoff's proposal. I mean, really, I don't know what type of committee member he is, but we've got a duty.
John, I must get you on the tax laws.
I don't know how you approve the tax laws then.
Ask Tava Mufumadi, not me.
But we do need to go through this.
But I've been through it twice. Haven't you been through it?
Okay.
Well, I'm going through it, and I'm asking why. Why did the? Maybe you can tell me, Mr. Quinoff.
I said I'm happy with it.
No, can you? What are you happy with? The judges came and they said they didn't have shells or must. Okay. The department proposed first of all. They're not clear. They proposed first of all shall, and Mr. Langestall wants it, and then Mr. Robertson wants must. What do you think?
Well. If basically no problem with me with either of the three versions, not a problem at all.
Don't
it's not changing the general general emphasis of this code of conduct. Not a thing of it. But you know what I'm against is that we can deliberate on an issue like that for 20 or 30 minutes. That's nonsense and a waste of time. And we have said at the beginning we stick to the original as far as possible. If we're in doubt, go back to the original. It's as simple as that.
Honourable Schaefer, come up with some
I want to propose Mr. Quinoff is appointed to tidy it up and compare it.
Work on it, so it's fine.
No, my concern is just, I just don't think we've all got a document that we can properly work off, and I was wondering whether we could maybe get something with the original code and it's very clearly showing what has been taken off, because I can't understand what's going on, quite frankly. I mean, to sit and try and compare with this document and that document, and if we have one document which is the original judge's code and whatever the department wants to change, and then we can decide, then we can go through it. I don't have a problem sitting on a committee, I do it all the time, and I'm quite happy to accept my responsibility to do that, but it's really, I'm finding it very difficult to follow.
Honourable Smith.
Mr. Chair, may I propose that Mr. DeLonge and go sit down and take the original version, as Mr. DeLonge said it was going to do. Then just a small footnote, just saying department, so we know this is departmental input.
Yeah.
And we go through them tomorrow, whenever, and we say acceptable, not acceptable, acceptable, not acceptable, and we go through them. But I don't think we should be arguing about must and shall and do's.
Yeah.
I mean, and my honest opinion is, I don't sit and draft laws the whole time. And if anyone drafts those laws, it's Mr. DeLong and Mr. Roberts. So, and it's not judges who draft laws. So if any grammatical tidying up needs to be done, I would guess that Mr. DeLong and Mr. Roberts is the best entitled to say, this is how we draft laws, this is how it is in sync with other laws, and therefore listen to what they have said. If it's not acceptable, strike it out, and we go on. But to argue about must and shalls and do's and don'ts and...
What's the rule and what's going to change the wire?
Are we happy with that suggestion, Ma'am?
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy with the suggestion of getting the original document and really indicating what needs to be changed. But at the same time, maybe to the contrary, I think you need to put it in the right language so that by the time the committee approves it, we know that it's ready. Because the danger is if it comes here and it's not in the right language and we approve it, you might actually find it really proceeding like that. So we need to just be sure that the language is correct.
I think let us leave it at that. Can I tell you a story about Shal? The story about Shal.
Shall we adjourn?
The faculty of law at my university wanted to go and visit Peter Maritzburg. It was Supreme Court by that time. And then the university initially approved that no, you are law students, you need to go to the to go and visit the court. And during the preparations, they said, just put it down, a request, put it in writing. Now, they wrote a letter which was saying, the faculty of law shall go to the Peter Maritzburg Supreme Court. The faculty of law shall require so much to go there. And it was turned down. And then they say, why? They say, the word you use, shall. We are taking offense to that language that was used in the letter. And the trip at the end didn't materialize. Yeah, that's because of the word, the use of the word shall.
Sometimes it needs to be called shall.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Shall we adjourn?
Robert
shall
must we adjourn? And
I think there's still, I mean, why don't we carry on with what we can do? I mean, for example, this issue, I think it's a fundamental question. What do we say about judges appearing at public hearings? Do we want a restriction on them?
Okay,
well, that we can do about. I don't know what Mr. Kornhoff's view is, or maybe he doesn't mind.
I don't mind.
You don't mind whether judges appear or not?
I do not mind. why don't you do it?
Can I hear the view of the department on this proposal, Mr. Robertson?
It is in the undeleted. I believe it was, and the judges itself proposes that they can appear before public hearings, but for only for certain aspects that relates to matters concerning the law, the legal system, or the administration of justice. I believe from time to time it's necessary for judges to appear before or appear at public hearings to discuss matters of that nature. I don't think judges need to be protected against that. I think the only protection that must be afforded is where a judge is inter alia requested to appear before in a public hearing relating to something else maybe that may influence or have an effect on the judicial independence or where he has to pronounce on certain decisions or values. So our submission is that the current note is correct.
Honourable Leonard.
Chair, I hear what Mr. Kornhoff is saying, and
But isn't it also about perception? You know. Well, yeah, but he says it's not a problem for a judge to appear at a political rally. Whereas public hearing. Depends on the public hearing, you see. And as I said, it might just influence people's perception. You know, they've seen him there or her there, and there you have it. Now, I don't know. That's my only concern, Chair. A lot of what we do here has to do with perceptions. And once you've lost the trust of people, then, you know, it's very hard to regain it.
Before you proceed, Ms. Robertson, Schaefer.
I think it depends on the definition of public hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that really does, and maybe we need to look at putting one in if necessary. I mean, I don't have a problem with them coming to give us input like they did yesterday at all. It's in the interest, and it is in the interest of justice and so on to do so. But yes, I would certainly have a problem with anyone appearing at any kind of political meeting whatsoever, or heading any kind of body that's political in nature, that kind of thing. I mean, so maybe we need to look at whether it's possible to put something like that in. And we could perhaps look at saying any kind of, I don't know if we want to confine it to bodies like parliament or tribunals or what, and maybe include a provision that anything that is could have the effect of making, of interfering with the perception of independence, something like that.
Well, what are we doing now? Are we proceeding with the with the deliberation on the document? Because there were some suggestions, I was thinking that there was some overwhelming feeling that maybe we request that Mr. Roberts and Mr. Dan go and put the documents together and come back in our next meeting and we compare the original one by the judges and the one that they shall have put, because it would appear this one was sort of difficult to follow.
It will make following the arguments much easier, because then you've got the two next to each other, you know exactly where the speaker's coming from, he takes a point of discussion.
Okay, let us attend at this stage. Okay, let me explain it to you what's going to happen. Our program says our next meeting is on the 23rd of May, that is next week Tuesday. But let me just warn you that it's subject to approval, because it depends whether we are allowed to sit while there are some APCs going on.
APCs are over.
It's a joint sitting next week, but it's a Wednesday, and it's a joint sitting on Africa Day or something. I'm sure we can drag ourselves away from this.
And later place.
23rd is Tuesday.
23rd
is Wednesday.
No, it's not. It's Wednesday.
Our next meeting is Tuesday, but you will get the notice. Okay. All right. It will be duly amended and circulated before the time.
But look at Wednesday, Mr. Roberts and Mr. Delange. We are looking at Wednesday for the next meeting. Okay.
Afternoon.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Afternoon. Yes. At 2. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, honourable members. Yes. Today was not like yesterday.
No, it
wasn't. There's too many mess and shells here.
The department, please stick to the original as far as possible.
Yeah.
But as long as Musa was called
so we can just see what that was. Okay.
I don't actually have to take her on the other side.